I'll just turn these on. We're certainly thankful for this blessed service as we've had this morning. Brother David, we're thankful he's here with us. I remember when he was a baby, we were down at Lexi Church in Tylertown, and Sister Robin Addison was holding him, and she had red hair, and he had red hair. And it's amazing that now he's up here preaching. What a wondrous blessing that is. You know, we here at Union kind of have empty nester syndrome. We had Brother Joe Myers coming preaching for us so much, and now he's gone and serving the church at Kenner, and we're kind of empty nesters. So it's been a great blessing to have Brother David here with us, and he brought a lot of good thoughts to our attention. And just for a few moments, I'd like to hitch on to his wagon and go a little ways. If you'll turn me to Psalm 85, verse 10 of Psalm 85 says, "Mercy and truth are met together. Righteousness and peace have kissed each other." Well, that's kind of interesting language there to describe that. I think my mic's working now. But it says, mercy and truth are met together. You know, it's a great blessing for us to receive mercy from the Lord. In fact, we should pray for mercy every day because we are sinners in His sight. And mercy is not getting what you deserve. Mephibosheth didn't. He didn't get what he deserved as the grandson of a king that was David's enemy and tried to kill David on many occasions. He received mercy from David. But you know, if you receive mercy, you're receiving special treatment because you're not getting what you deserve. Now, I remember Brother Mark Quarles talking about the Christian judges that he worked with, that they are very hard on justice and obeying the law and criminals getting prosecuted for that. He says, but where they would get in trouble is in the sentencing, because they would extend mercy. And that's where they would have problems, because then crime was not getting punished the way it ought to get punished. But you know, we beg God for mercy. We desire mercy from God. But mercy and justice and judgment don't go together. If you are receiving mercy, then justice was not served. If you receive justice for your work and your actions, you didn't receive mercy. They don't go hand in hand. And so for him to say mercy and truth are met together, we're hearing about something that's not normal. It's not normal. In James chapter 2, he says, if you offend one point of the law, you're guilty of the whole law. And he says, mercy rejoiceth against judgment. In other words, we as sinners in God's sight, if we receive mercy, justice was not served. So how can mercy and truth be met together? There's only one explanation I can give you this morning, and that's in the person of Jesus Christ. That's the only way that mercy and truth are met together, and it has a good outcome for you and I. Mercy and truth are met together because Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. You know, grace, the law was given by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. He is the way, the truth, and the life. So mercy and truth are met together in Jesus Christ. And then he says, righteousness and peace have kissed each other. You know, we would not, as Brother David has mentioned, we would not have peace with God because we're sinners. How would we have peace? The only way is in righteousness. And we don't have enough righteousness, as Brother David has pointed out to us. We don't have enough righteousness to be righteous in the sight of God. You may be righteous to somebody else. They may look upon you as a righteous person, but in the sight of God, He knows all about you. He knows your sinful thoughts. He knows the sinful things you say in private that no one else sees. I mean, none of us ever gossip in private, do we? We don't ever do that. I mean, He knows all the things that we do and say in private and in public, and we are not righteous in God's sight. But I'll tell you this morning, we are righteous in God's sight because of what Jesus has done for you and I. We have, as Brother David has mentioned, the imputed righteousness of Jesus Christ upon us. And that is how we have peace with God. You know, you will not have real peace without righteousness. That's when things get to be, that's when warfare erupts. That's when conflicts arise, right? When people aren't doing what they should. When people are doing the wrong thing. I mean, we can all live in this world and be at peace with one another. But when one crime is committed, suddenly our peace is gone. Righteousness is needed for true peace. And if we're sinners in God's sight, we will not have peace between us and God. But because of Jesus and His righteousness in fulfilling the law to a jot and a tittle and paying for our sins, we have peace with God because of Jesus making peace between us and God. Now He, you know, sometimes we get the idea that peace comes through compromise, but God didn't do that. Jesus didn't do that. He didn't say, now just relax your standards a little bit and we're going to try and bring them up. That's not what happened. Jesus didn't make God compromise. He reconciled us to God. That's how He did it. We have peace with God because of the work of Jesus Christ. Righteousness and peace have kissed each other. Look at that expression. Now, when you kiss someone, that's a close, affectionate, that's a close bond, a close fellowship. That's something that happens at weddings. That's something that happens between a husband and a wife. We're seeing a close bond between righteousness and peace here in this expression. And I believe that that is that way for a reason. You know, in Isaiah chapter 32, verse 17, it says, "And the work of righteousness shall be peace. And the effect of righteousness, quietness and assurance forever." That's describing the work of Jesus Christ. His work of righteousness as our high priest. Our high priest. And I believe it was a few weeks back, we talked about Melchizedek in Hebrews chapter 7. And in verse 2, he says he's first king of righteousness, then king of peace. That's the order. If you want peace, righteousness must come first if you want to have peace. And Jesus came and did a work of righteousness, and now we have peace with God, just as Mephibosheth did at the table of David. So unexpected. As Brother David brought to our attention, Mephibosheth was probably scared to be brought to King David's side. He knew what his grandfather had done to David and all the conflict and the enemies. But you know, we were enemies with God. That's what Romans 5 teaches. It teaches us that God commended His love toward us in sending His Son Jesus while we were enemies of God. Can you imagine that? Imagine dying for someone who's a good man or a righteous man. We might do that. Soldiers in our military go and do that. But can you imagine dying for people who are unworthy of that? They are sinners, they are vile in your sight, and they're even your enemy. Can you imagine that? I tell you, I don't think that we fully can comprehend the love of God that He has showered upon us. Why did He love us so? How can He love us so much? Well, mercy and truth, righteousness and peace. These are the things that we cling to this morning. We cling to the truth that is found in the Scriptures. And you know, if you read here in verse 11, it says, "Truth shall spring out of the earth, and righteousness shall look down from heaven." Isn't that interesting language? He says, "Truth shall spring out of the earth." When I think of things like truth and righteousness, I think of inanimate objects. I think of a concept, not something that is real or physical or tangible that I can put my hands around. But you know, He is describing, I believe, Jesus Christ. "Truth shall spring out of the earth." You know who came out of that grave victorious over death, victorious over the grave? Jesus did. And Jesus is the truth personified. Came out of that ground. The truth sprung out of the earth. And it says, "And righteousness shall look down from heaven." What's looking down on us this morning? You know, sometimes we come to the house of God and we don't really fully understand or appreciate the enormity of where we are. We are in the house of God. We are in Mount Zion, the joy of the whole earth. And you and I, here in this place, we can rejoice in what Jesus has done no matter what's going on in our life. No matter how awful our life might be, we always can rejoice in the Lord because of what Jesus has done. You and I heard someone recently say that our life is just like a parenthetical statement. It's just here for a little while. It's really not that much consequence, but what really matters is what happens next. That's for all eternity. For all eternity to live, that's what really counts. This life, we have our ups and downs, but what does it really even matter when where we know we're going when this life ends because of what Jesus has done for us? Righteousness right now is looking upon this service from heaven. And when God sees us, He sees us through the blood of Jesus Christ. We are righteous in God's sight. Isn't that something? We are holy and without blame in God's sight. Now, we don't see ourselves that way yet. We're still sinners, as Brother David says. We have a conflict inside of us. We have God's Spirit inside of us that wants to do good, wants to do the right thing. But we also have this sin that dwells in us that wants to do what the world's doing. Wants to do what everyone else is doing. That song we sang this morning, "Lord, let me praise Thee in the morning." It says, we know Thy love is jealous. You know, God's love is jealous. If you ever have someone who doesn't like you loving somebody else more than them, and this is appropriate in a husband-wife relationship, they don't want their spouse loving someone else more than them, that's not right. Well, I'll tell you, it's also not right for the bride of Christ to have more love and more affection for something else more than Him. God should be that He should be the primary love that we have in our heart over anybody else, over anything else, over any other activity, anything else. God should be our primary love. He is the one who has demonstrated more love to us than anyone else is even capable of demonstrating. God has loved us so much. That great love wherewith He hath loved us, that we should be called the sons of God. God's love to us. You know, I just want to love Him more. I want to love the Lord more today than I did yesterday. It seems like I really fail in that department of showing my love to the Lord. How do we show our love to the Lord? How does He want us to show us His love? You know, people have their love languages, and people give me a hard time for really focusing on that. But you know, if you really want to show love to somebody, you need to know how they like to receive love. Some people, it's just quality time. You don't have to do anything. They ain't got to give them nothing. Ain't got to do nothing for them. Just be there with them. That's some people's love language. And some people want to hear it. They just want to hear you say, "I love you," or whatever. Words of affirmation. You know, everyone has their thing, you understand? But what is the Lord? How does the Lord want us to show us that He loves Him? Well, Jesus told His disciples, "If you love Me, keep My commandments." That's what He wants you to do. He wants you to do what He's commanded us to do if you want to show your love for the Lord. Well, I'll tell you, after all that we have heard this morning about what the Lord has done for us, the covenant that He made and that He honors and that He still showers us down with blessings because of the covenant that He made, all this that the Lord, you know, the more we learn about what the Lord has done for us, because the gospel reveals the righteousness of God, the more we learn about this. And it seems like each time we meet, we learn more and more about what God has done for us. Does that not inspire in us a desire to love Him more? To love Him better today than we did yesterday? I pray that the Lord would give us that desire and give us those opportunities to show our love to Him in each day that we live and the things that we do and say. I thank you for your good attention this morning.